Let's pray together. Father God, we just thank you so much for bringing us to this place today to worship you and to hear from you. As Lauren comes and shares her story, we pray that you would speak through her, that we may hear from you and be touched by your word and her story today. We're so thankful that no matter what we go through in life, you're always there whether we realize it or not. And so we just want to lift up Lauren to you today. In your prayer, amen.
Hello. So most of you know me as Lauren, who comes up here and sings, and wow, that's great. But you don't know how I got here. And that is the story I'm going to share today. And some of it can be kind of dark and sad, and it was fearful. But the end and the redemption and the hope that came at the end is really where the story lies. And the reason I love that last song is it's like in the searching and the waiting and the healing and the hurting and all the broken pieces, there were blessings. And I love that line, because even when we're in the hardest parts of life, we don't think of those as blessings. We don't think of those as things that are actually working for our own good. But I'm here to tell you that every broken piece that I had to go through led me to immeasurable abundance of blessings. And so I want to learn how to trust in God and how to have faith even when it's hard. So I, too, got the text message from Charles saying, "Will you please call me at your earliest convenience?" And we all know what that means. He wants us to do something. What is it going to be? And this time I was like, oh, that. So this is definitely out of my comfort zone. I'm used to being in front of people, and I'm used to being up here and performing or sharing. But this time I'm going to be sharing hard personal things to me, and that's where this is going to be the difficult part. But I hope that through my story, you can find your broken pieces and see where your blessings are. And when you're down and in despair, reach for the one who's there to help you out of it. And that's the one thing I learned, is that in the darkest times, that is when and help. We say, you know, "Dear God, please help me." Even if we're not a great prayer or we're not that close to God, even the furthest person away from the church can say, "Dear God, just please help me through this." It's those moments is built and is transformed. So I always say, like, what is faith? Where does it come from? How do you get it? That's what be like, you, as a kid, you look at people like, gosh, how do they have so much faith and trust in God? And I know now you have to live through things in life, I think, to get there. I don't think you're just born with it. So that's going to be my story. So Proverbs 3:5-6 says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not depend on your own understanding. Seek his will in all you do, and he will show you which path to take." So in this journey I'm going to share, I didn't understand why all this was happening to me. I didn't understand, you know, I thought I was a good person, and all this is just, it's not in my control. All of this is in God's control. He makes the ultimate plan and the ultimate decisions for our life. As much as we try to hold on to control, we are not in control. So, the beginning. So, growing up, I loved music, loved singing, and that was pretty much my life. I had voice lessons and talent competitions and theater and chorus, and that was everything. Music was my outlet. When I felt bad, I would sing, and that was the way I felt, you know, even in church, the way I feel the most connected is when I'm singing. I can hear a great sermon, and I love it, but sometimes a song can just transpose me somewhere else. It's just, like, amazing. So I wanted to be a singer when I grew up, and then I also wanted to be a meteorologist. So I thought I could mix the two, and I could be singing the weather. But anyway, that was the plan. But in high school, I dealt with some depression, and it really was a hard time for me because I don't feel mentally stable, not unstable, but I just wasn't confident in myself. And I ended up meeting my future husband during that time, and everything was great at the time. So he did music and I did music, and we connected so well in music. It was just like a match made in heaven, and I was like, I found my person. This is it. I don't need anything else anymore. But I think because of my fragile state, I wasn't thinking clearly through that choice. So I ended up getting married right out of high school. You know, I had graduated high school with honors, and I could have went on to go to college, but I threw all my eggs in this basket and said, nope, I'm good. I don't have to worry anymore. I'm set. And I thought it was a great decision at the time. And everything was great. But the problem is, after we got married, things started to change. He looked at me more as a possession or something that was his and not an equal kind of partnership. So where there was my friends, my dreams, my family, it became our family and our dreams and what we are going to do. There was no independent thoughts and feelings. There was a thing where it's like, we have our box. Everything that happens stays in our box. That means it doesn't get out, and this is going to stay in our box. And I wasn't really in many relationships to know that this wasn't normal. I just thought, okay, well, this is the way things go. Well, my family started to get very concerned and realized something's not right here. But I was, you know, I grew up with a divorced, you know, mom and dad, and I was determined to make this work, and I was going to do everything I could to make it work. I didn't want to be a divorced woman. I thought that was I had a stigma to it. I wasn't okay with that. So I was going to stand by him, and I was going to stand by this marriage no matter what, through thick and thin, because that's what we're supposed to do. However, I didn't know in certain circumstances it probably would have been better to leave. So he started to feel threatened, I think, by my family or any outsiders that could influence me to say, this is not good. So I was cut off from my whole family. I had no friends. I lived in his house, and that's what it was. It was survival just in that situation. There was nobody I could call and talk to. It was just us. And I learned to survive that way because, again, I had made this choice, and I felt like the honorable thing to do was to stay with it. So I, for years, didn't speak to my mom, didn't speak to my brother. My dad and Arlene were barely a part of my life. Anybody that he felt was threatening to him wasn't allowed around. And I read it best when somebody talked about emotional abuse and manipulative behavior. It's harder for the victim to see it. You know, when you get hit or you get, you know, you go, that's bad, that's bad. But if somebody is a little bit at a time degrading you and making you feel less than or taking away your freedom little by little, you don't see it. And I read something that related it best to a dripping faucet, that the first drips, they drip. And you're like, yeah, that doesn't seem good, but it's okay. I mean, I'm not getting hit. It can't be that bad. And then the drips start to come even faster and faster. And it's like, okay, it's getting a little much. And then by the time you feel like you realize it, you're underwater. There's nowhere for you to go. There's nothing for you to do. And that was the case with me. I was cut off from my family. I had no friends. I had nothing of mine. There was no money for me. There was nothing that I could just get up and go with. I was alone. I'll say the best things that happened out of our marriage was the birth of Danielle and Jolie. And those were my little ray of hope. That was the one thing I had that was unconditional love. It was, they love me. No matter what, there was no conditions. They weren't trying to get me to believe anything or do anything or not do anything. And then So his behavior was not good at that time. It was in a manipulative stage, and I was isolated, and he was controlling. I thought that was as bad as it could get. It wasn't. So I'd say around 2014 started to change even more. And then, I'm in this place where I feel like I've made this decision, and I'm in it, so I'm just going to live through it. Well, he started to get paranoid, and he started to have, like, I'd say his mental health issues were really declining, and he was not seeking help, and he was not thinking he needed it. So everybody was out to get him, and I think part of his controlling manipulative behavior was because he had these underlying mental health issues. But he thought that our house was infested with bugs and animals and all kinds of things. So he literally took all the furniture in the house, put it in the backyard, and burned it. All the kids' toys, all the kids' blankets, everything. We lost it all. And we ended up living in one room, and we had all of us would all sleep in the same room. And I don't know if that was a controlling thing, but it sure felt like okay, we're all together. And, you know, during that time, he would screw the doors shut, screw the cabinets shut, and everything just felt so not right, so wrong, but there was nothing I could do about it. I felt so lost and so apart from any help. Then I thought that was the worst it could get. It wasn't. So then the paranoia grew to, I believe, a paranoid schizophrenic level. So he started to hear voices that were telling him to do things, and it was very terrifying. It was a very scary thing to live with because he was so unpredictable. He just didn't know what was going to happen from one minute to the next. In the middle of the night, he would just jump up and say, "We got to go. We got to do this." Just so always unpredictable. You didn't know what was going to happen. It was so fearful and scary. And the girls lived through this, and this was their normal. You know, from losing all their stuff, living in one room, to then having this fear, this was the way they grew up. And it was terrifying, and it was awful. And again, I say, you know, people look at me now, and they go, "You are so strong." I said, "I've never thought of myself as strong. I thought I was the least strong, almost a coward, because I didn't have the strength to get out. I could not get my legs to walk out. Every time I thought the thoughts, I'd pull them back and say, no, no, no." And a lot of it was because I didn't have anywhere to go. He had cut me off from anything I had, so where was I to go to? But when the paranoid thoughts happened, he ended up started calling the police and the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security, saying all these people were after him and they're coming to get him. And in order to help him feel better, he got us all manipulated into thinking that this was really happening and the girls were experiencing the same things. Well, as you can see where this is going, the state was like, "There's something wrong here." And the girls went to school one day, and they were not there when I went to pick them up that day. And this is the part of the story where it's like, I don't want to share it because I feel embarrassed by it. But I know it's not at my doing that this stuff happened, but it's such an important part of the story that the kids were taken from me. And I'll say us, but really, they were taken from me. And I think as a mother, that's the worst nightmare you can even imagine, that you've had these children, you've raised them, they're, for me, they were my hope, my life, they were everything, and then all of a sudden they were gone, and I was left with him, alone. I used to pray to get to the sunsets of each day, because that meant I made it through one more day without them, and the next day would start. I developed a persona that I could be somebody else, because my life was way too painful. So I was like, well, the only way I can survive this is if I'm not even me. I'm going to have to pretend like I don't have children, I don't have family, I don't have anything, this is, and I just coasted just to get just to get by. It was like the girls had to grow up so fast, and they had to endure so much so young, that I hope they can take this same lesson that I'm teaching you, that it, through those things, Jesus was always there. I might not have had my eyes open to see it, but he was always there. I'm going to fast forward a little bit. So I don't know what got me to start, but I started to listen to the Christian radio station, The Joy FM. And all of a sudden, these words of hope and that you're never too far gone, I'm always with you, there's always a way out, all these words just started to brew inside me. And I started to feel this fire inside me. Because I'd always been meek and mild and not strong. But all of a sudden it was like, I'm getting angry. And I don't get angry, but I started to feel like this anger coming inside me, like, okay, you're going to be okay. It's going to be okay. So I started taking steps to get myself ready. I'd lost everything, so what did I have to lose? So I got myself a credit card secretly so I would have it. And then, you know, I had a little part-time job, so I had my own money. And I'd be listening to these songs, and especially the song Rescue came out that year, which I'll sing after this. The song saved my life. I would listen to that song as I did pet sitting, so I'd be driving in the car from house to house, and I would be hearing the song. And I just tell you, that song saved my life, because I didn't feel like I had any hope. I didn't have anything left in me. There was nothing worth living for. I was done. Everything I had and cared about was gone. And I wasn't strong enough to change it until Jesus, he started to get it going. He's got it going in me. And so September 24th, I called my rescue day. 2019, September 24th. So I say I didn't want to leave my husband or be divorced because I didn't want to feel that stigma. And I also didn't want to feel bad about that. Well, September 24th, something really bad happened where I felt like my life was threatened. And then that's when I was like, okay, this is different. And if you've heard anybody talk about, you know, kidnappers who escape their situation, they'll talk about how time just stands still and that they didn't even feel anything and they just knew. And I will tell you, it is so true. I was in there. I mean, so again, I remember my legs, they don't walk. They just stay put. Well, all of a sudden, time stood still. Couldn't hear anything. It's almost like a fog. And I heard the words, go. Just go. Walk out the door. And I was like, again, think stuttering probably. My legs aren't working. They're not wanting to move. And then it was like, okay. And I walked. I grabbed my purse, I grabbed my phone, and I walked out the door. And I didn't think I was ever coming back. And I was crying, and I was all upset. But it was 20, 30 minutes. I started to smile. I started to laugh. And the first thing I thought was, I can call my family. I could have friends. I could see them for Christmas and Thanksgiving. And I was so joyful. It was an amazing feeling. Yes, there was this fear because I just left and I was afraid he could come after me. But in that moment, I was surrounded with this amazing peace and hope. It was amazing. So anyway, for a few weeks, I was free. And I was telling people kind of what I'd lived through, and every time I would talk about it, it would be like water just flowing, because I was finally speaking my truth, because for so long I was told, it stays in our box, you know, the truth stays right here. So to finally be able to say what I had went through, it was so cathartic and therapeutic that I couldn't stop. I just kept coming and coming and coming. And then October happened, and I got a call that David had passed away unexpectedly. And I threw the phone to the floor, and I got on my knees, and I said, it's all my fault. It's all my fault. And that was one of my fears when I left, was that he wouldn't be okay. But that's why I had to wait for my life to feel threatened in order to feel like it wouldn't be my fault. This was not my fault. And then you have to understand that he didn't see his kids from March all the way to when October happened. So the girls didn't see their father either. So the very next time I have to see the girls, I have to tell them they're not going to see their dad again. And that was one of the hardest things I ever had to do. So when we met up, they were so excited because they got to see me, and it was kind of an unexpected visit, like, oh, we get to see mom today. Because at this time, I wasn't allowed to really see them independently because I was still attached to him with the court, and they didn't trust me. So this was a kind of an exciting moment for them. But to have to tell them, you will not see your father again, it was the hardest thing. And they didn't even know what to make of it, because first, why? Why didn't we get to say goodbye? That was their first thing. Why didn't we get to say goodbye? And I couldn't answer that. But anyway, that was a really hard day. And we've moved, you know, through this, and we're all okay now. But he was also a really famous guitarist, musician in Atlanta. So I knew I had to somehow get the word out to those people that he had passed away. And at this time, I was still really cold and not feeling that warmth of a message. So it took me a few days. I think I took 3 days to actually put it out there, what had happened. And it was like a flood of comments and things, because people didn't know what was happening behind closed doors. They knew his talent, and they knew that. But this was, so they were all responding, and I just started freaking out. I'm like, I have to have a funeral. What am I going to do? And we had come to Kingswood a few times that summer, and so I said, I'll call Kingswood. I'll just see if we can just have a funeral there. There's enough space. And that's how I called Charles the first time. And when I say one call can change your whole life, it can. And this is that part where I couldn't see what God was working at all at this time. I'm a broken, just rescued, have no idea what's in front of me. God knew exactly who I was supposed to call and when I was supposed to call him and where I was supposed to go. And it was right here. And that day changed my whole life. So it began with just planning a funeral. And that was the first time, I guess, you got to know me and my story. And I sang at the funeral. And so that was the first time Alan played, and I sang, and Charles heard me, and so I was invited to kind of join the choir here at church, and I was so happy, because you have to remember, I wasn't really allowed to sing in my life. This was, when I started singing here, it was the first time in 12 years I was able to express and sing. So when y'all say, thank you so much for singing, I say, no. Thank you for letting me. But it didn't just end there. So, Charles knew my story and kind of a little about the girls. And he said, what can we do to help? And I said, well, I have to have a place to live. And I had a house. It wasn't in the best of shape. And it was also where a bunch of trauma and terrifying things happened. But that was kind of my best bet at getting the girls back, was to have that house. And he said, well, I'm going to have Phil Coburn and Mike Puckett come over, and we're going to just look at the house. And I just told Charles that I had a broken window. I said, I just need a broken window that's fixed. And So they come over, and I'm embarrassed. I'm thinking, they must be thinking, gosh, look at this. I had no idea what God was working out with the three of them. While I was feeling embarrassed and low and terrible, he had moved in their hearts underneath my house to say, we need to help her. Well, I had no idea what that meant. But when the blessings that have come from Kingswood are of that of supernatural power. There's no explanation. There's no reason. It's just God's love. And it was me trusting in God that got me here. So the pool party project was born. And so many of you were a part of this amazing, beautiful, miraculous transformation. So there's my broken window. But that is not all that was fixed. You guys said you were going to help me. I had no idea what that meant. I did not know you were going to come in and come with a whole group of church members who I'm still new. Y'all really don't know me, but y'all stopped what you were doing to come help me, become my friend, welcome me. And it is something that I will always be forever grateful for. So that was the beginning of my life. All those people dropped everything they had to help me. And then the blessings came from there. Then, you know, I was walking dogs. I needed more stable income to still get the girls to come home. And Charles calls me and he says, do you need a job? I said, yeah, I do. He says, well, Greg McCann is needing somebody at the bank. I'm like, he's like, have you ever thought about banking? And I went, no, but I sure am willing to try. So part of the story I didn't talk about was that in those years, you know, we had a music school and I pretty much ran the bookkeeping and the advertising and all of the office aspect of it. So I had some experience with that. And I said, is that good enough? Is that something that qualifies me? I don't know. But God was working in him too. Because obviously he said, take a chance on her. Because I had no qualifications. I didn't have a degree. I don't have any work experience. It was just, we think she'll be good. And I think it's turned out to be an okay decision. And the blessings continued. I mean, they came and go. So then I was able to finally get the girls home. And we actually had a word home for the first time. They had their own rooms that displayed their characteristics of what they liked and the colors they wanted. And I had a beautiful room for me to feel comfort and safe in. It's not even the same place. It's a totally different place. So the girls came home. They have been excelling and growing and being able to chase whatever their dreams are. And none of that would have been possible without Kingswood. And I forgot to mention that during the pool party project, I moved in with Charles in June, and I became daughter number three. And officially, my title is little girl. So I'm always little girl, and I always will be little girl. But I could go on and on and on about the love and the amazing people in this church. It is not something I don't think that you can find in most places. Alrighty. So through this whole thing, I now know God was with me the whole time. I didn't see it, and I didn't know it. I probably didn't even know where to look because it all looked dark. But it's like when your house is all dark and you have a candle, you see that light. So it was in that darkness that I fought and I saw the light. I've learned to trust in God's timing. See, when I felt like I wasn't strong enough and I didn't know when I was going to ever get to move and finally walk out the door, well, God knew the perfect time, and I finally was able to. It's in those times that we reach out to God. It's not in our happy, joyful times where we're like, man, praise the Lord. We do, but it's almost in those desperations that we really try to develop our relationship with God. And this is where our faith grows. So we talked about at the beginning, what is faith and where does it come from? My story is where mine came from. And the girls, I hope that they, you know, I'm thankful that they got this lesson early. You know, maybe they'll take it with them and know, man, through all that, look what happened at the end. And know, God was with them too. So if you're struggling or feel like God doesn't hear you or see you, He does. It's just in His timing, not ours. He may be working things out in your life that you can't see yet, and it's all in His perfect plan. So Jeremiah 29:11 says, "For I know the plans that I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." And He knew exactly from the beginning of where I was, and He knew where I was going to end up. He knew what I had to get through to get to that point. So when I sing Rescue, you'll hear the lyrics, "You are not hidden, and there's never been a moment you were forgotten. You are not hopeless. I will send out an army to find you. In the middle of the darkest night, I will rescue you." So Lord, I pray that we can all learn to trust in you more. And know that you are in control and that you see everything that is ahead of us. Even when we don't know or understand, you're working everything out for us. And we are never too far or lost or broken that you can't find us and rescue us. Thank you.